Hey there, welcome to line number 46 with Summer Phoebus. She is a in-person friend of mine. I have known her for many years through the ministry called She Works His Way. I also met her through Michelle Myers. And today we're addressing two lies together. I am a bad parent and I am not productive.
You're listening to the What's the Truth podcast with me, Jessica Hoddle. I'm a number one bestselling author, wife, and coach. I refuse to let you keep believing the lies that are coming at you from every direction. Every week, I'll speak truth, bring encouragement, and inspire you as I uncover the lies you may believe to be true about your life. Each episode is meant to challenge the way you think to change the way you live.
Summer is just amazing at explaining, breaking down, and giving tips to encourage you on how to better parent your children as individual mother and father, and how she also shares how her and Kent, her husband, come together on this topic and how they really continue to have their marriage thrive because they were so young when they got married. They weren't married very long before they had children. And so they had to learn a lot along the way. She shares also then from parenting, we go right into productivity of what it looks like to be productive. And I love the lies that she shares. So you're going to want to listen to the whole episode today because she gives you clear tips on parenting, how to be more productive. She shares lies that you might be believing around productivity. And here's the kicker. We talk about parenting and productivity together. Maybe you have been working from home and trying to take care of your kids, or maybe you found yourself homeschooling half this year, half during the week and half not. Whatever it looks like, I want you to be encouraged by Summer as she shares very specific tips and tangible action steps that you can take today on becoming a better parent and even more productive in your life. Let's go ahead and get to the interview. Summer, I'm so glad that you're here with us today. I've known you. You're like an in-person real life friend. I don't know that whole like in real life friend, however you say that.
Yeah.
I met you obviously through Michelle and She Works His Way. And I've been a partner with She Works His Way for I'm like one year behind the founders of all of you guys.
Yeah.
So like 4 years or 5 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And you're the perfect person to talk about productivity and parenting. So we're going to talk about parenting, then we're going to talk about productivity, and then we're going to combine them because I know a lot of moms are probably like ripping their hair out of how do I be a stay-at-home mom? How do I come home and help my children and be productive, you know, since they're at home or maybe, you know, half day or whatever it is.
Yes.
So first of all, let's give them some credibility. Talk about how long you've been married. Talk about how old your kids are because you still look, I swear, 25 to me. I tell you all the time. Oh, like you look, if you guys could see Summer, I swear, she's always the hipster and you would never believe how old her kids were if you saw her.
Okay. That is the sweetest thing ever. Day made 100%. But I have been married for, we are going on 21 years and I have two daughters, 20 and 18. So the most incredible and difficult age. You think potty training's hard and then you have to like push these kids into real life. And it's like, oh, this is hard, but they are wonderful. And it is teaching me so, so much. But I honestly would credit all of my good fashion to my kids. It is very cool to have a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old because you're just like, hey, dress me. What do I need? So it helps. It helps so much.
And how old are you, Summer?
I'm going to be 40 tomorrow.
I'm telling you guys, you have to go find her at Summer Phoebus on Instagram and you're going to be like, what? Okay. Anyways, I digress. So let's talk about parenting first, right? We know you are, I mean, I would consider you like a veteran at this point. You got a 20-year-old, you know. Can you kind of break down the stages and maybe give tips? So let's talk about maybe the 0 to 10 or 12, like when you hit that 13.
Yeah.
And then what did that stage look like for you and Kent as far as parenting?
My favorite advice that we got that I tell anyone with younger children came from my dad. And it was sitting in their house visiting. And I believe it was Kennedy. And I felt like the entire day had been dedicated to nothing but timeouts and talking. And I'm just like, I was so sick and tired of disciplining. And I knew my parents were watching, and I'm a young mom and I want to do a good job. But at the same time, I was tired. I was so tired of just saying no and pulling her away from things she shouldn't touch over and over again. And I remember my dad looked at me and he said, "Here's the thing you've got to remember. If you discipline on the front end, you won't have to on the back end. And it is so much easier to discipline a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old than it is a 15, 16, 17-year-old with the attitude and the hormones and all of the crazy thing." And he was so right. I'm so grateful. It encouraged me at the perfect time to just go all in and to understand that with little kids, there are weeks where it feels like you get nothing accomplished, but timeouts and discipline, however you choose to discipline that for your family, whatever that looks like, it feels like it is a boot camp situation. You will walk out of restaurants, you will walk out of shopping centers, and it will punish you too. It will feel that way. But if you stay consistent, it's so much easier to do that than when they're older. And so my kids now, we talk about, like, were we strict? I've asked them the question, like, would you consider Dad and I strict? And they're kind of the yes and the no, because we were super strict when they were younger, and then a little less strict when they were older, because we didn't have to be so strict. There was a proper fear there. There was a respect, a mutual respect when they got older. And so that, I think in those younger years, if you can just go all in on not letting things go, on being consistent, and just remembering that the future will be here before you know it, and there won't be these days worth of discipline. You will have better times coming and real conversations and things like that, that'll come in the future. It was so encouraging to me.
That's good. That was from 8 to 12. So let's talk about the 13 to the 18. Let's give some advice to those that have the teenagers now. Mm-hmm. And what would you say to them?
Oh man, I think it's a security thing that is just the top of the list for me. And it is just reminding your children, boys and girls, that they are incredible and wonderful and beautiful and smart and gifted and all of the things that the world will tell them they're not, and all of the things that the world will try to tell them they're not good enough. You have to be the parent who does that. But here's the hard part. And being the parent who is the biggest cheerleader and who makes sure that you tell them how wonderful they are, you have to be honest. And my kids will tell you, I was also the first person to let them know, hey, you know what? That's not your thing. And so let's not waste a ton more time there, okay? Let's back out of that sport or that whatever, and let's try something different. Otherwise, you get those American Idol kids who go and try out on national television and couldn't hit a note to save their life. And their mom is standing there cheering for them, and they're absolutely humiliated. Well, they probably aren't, because they don't know they're bad, but they will be humiliated. And nobody's to blame but the mom who took them and let them and said, hey, listen, Johnny, you are good. Go in there and do this. And sure enough, he is not good. So I think we also have to be the people who are honest with our kids. Our affirmation will mean more to them when we are also honest with their weaknesses, the areas that they need to work on. And at that age, what they want most of all is to know that they're loved no matter what. So if you aren't just loving them for the things that they are, the things that they're good at, but you're also loving them through their weaknesses and the things that maybe aren't their biggest, greatest gifts, then that's where that trust comes from. And they can always come to you, and they can always feel just honored to have conversations with you. And I think it creates this security that is probably one of the biggest issues for that adolescent stage of life right there, in that they are enough, not because they're incredible at everything, but because they are who they're supposed to be. And spiritually speaking, that's how the Lord does with us. So why wouldn't we take that? Why wouldn't we take that model when we're teaching it to our kids? So I think that's probably probably the biggest thing for us. And a side note on that, we have two girls. So I think Kent was huge in the conversations about body image, about boys, about all of the things that we see young women struggle with, including both parents and all the conversations. I think moms, when your kids have a rough, like if you have a son and he has a rough day at school or a rough practice or whatever, I think that you need to go in too. I don't think that just defaults to dad. So just remembering that those cross-gender conversations really matter as we're raising our children. I think it was important for us.
I'm so glad that you addressed the honesty part, because I was going to actually have you address that, because I think that that's a really important stage, thinking back to my own history of affirming who they are. Yes. You know, like you said, affirming who they are in Christ, their identity, their worth, but also kind of parenting and nurturing the gifts or not so gifts, because when you're just telling somebody that they're good all the time and then they get out into the quote unquote real world, yeah, and they believe, well, my mom told me that I was so good at this, you know? And I think, like you said, there's nothing wrong with that, mm-hmm, but where does it fall when we think about the marriage and the parenting with you and Kent, when it came to the two girls? I know you kind of just touched on that. Mm-hmm. Did he handle certain topics more, like you just said, of the body image and maybe their beauty and their looks and boys? Did you guys typically do that together, or how can you encourage parents, especially moms or maybe dads? A lot of moms will be listening to this, but how there's different parenting styles or perspectives, and how can you come together and really merge how you parent?
Yes. Okay. So since it's mostly moms here, I will be honest with you in saying one of the things that I see that can be the most devastating for your children and for your relationship with your spouse is when you treat your husband like the B team for parenting, or like the babysitter who comes in and takes over when you're just too tired to do anything else. And many moms will come right back really quickly and say, well, that's what he wants. And I would just say to that, please be sure. And that's still not okay, but please be sure before you just let him sit in that role. Most men want genuine, authentic, real relationships with their children. And that means that their parenting style won't be the same as yours, because they're men and they're fathers and they think differently and feel differently. But because their intention, their heart, and their motive is to love their kids well and to raise them well, and especially if they're believers, if they're Christian men, you have to let them go. You have to let them lead and teach and love your children. And you have to trust the way they do it. And you have to understand that relationship is just as special in a different way than your relationship as a mom. So when we cut our husbands out, or when we try to minimize their relationships with our kids, first of all, it's hurting our kids in the long run. It's hurting them in their future relationships. And it's also hurting the opportunity that our husbands have. And because men oftentimes are a bit passive, they will get tired of fighting for what they want, the relationship that they want, and they will go to take a back row seat because you've told them that they don't teach them homework right, or they don't do this right. And then you'll have a husband who isn't as engaged as what you had hoped for, and it'll be your fault. So I think remembering that is huge. Now, I will say that Kent and I will have pre-conversations before he has conversations with the girls, because he is a man. And so the emotional baggage that comes with a 13, 14, 15-year-old girl is something he doesn't quite understand. And so I will just have to remind him of little sentences here and there that, like, he probably shouldn't say, or timing, like, hey, yes, you are right. What you want to say to them is absolutely 100% true, but if you could wait for them to stop crying, that would probably be best for you and for them. So absolutely. But I think those are the pre-conversations, or I know sometimes, like, I'll give him a look and he'll be like, okay, let me finish. But the bottom line is it's definitely team effort. And I did say with the girls, he spends time with them outside of like family time, and he has conversations with them outside of family conversations. And that, I believe, is like, that's like the best parenting tip I could probably give to anyone. But that means you have to be intentional about scheduling that in. And it means that you have to encourage your husband in those moments. That means that he might get another break with your kids before you get another break. But it was really, really important. And so it's opened up the door to so many good conversations now.
Mm. Yeah. And they're wonderful kids. I mean, seeing you guys all together, obviously, I'm just going to keep bragging on you. How about you address marriage though? Let's talk about, what did your marriage need when they were 0 to 13? And what did your marriage need when they were 13 to 18? Do you know what? I think that each phase probably brought you a different kind of marriage, in a sense of what that looked like between days and sleeping and burping and timeouts, and versus, okay, they're 15, they're getting their license. Now they don't need me. Now you guys, because I often hear a lot of parents like don't know what to do when their kids leave because they don't know who they each other is anymore. And can you just speak into that of what your marriage looked like when they were young to what it looks like probably more now?
So if you did the math at the beginning, talking about the ages of my children and my age, I did have girls. I had my girls very young. We got married very young. And so we had this 5-year plan before we wanted kids, and it didn't go well. It ended up being like a 5-month plan. I found out I was pregnant after we got married. We got married in May, and I found out I was pregnant in December. And I think I hid under a blanket on the couch as soon as I saw the positive test. I didn't know what to do. I was just like, I barely know you, and now I'm having a baby. What is happening? And so we went through all the emotions. And I say that to say, we didn't have a plan like a lot of young people have now. They go through counseling, premarital counseling. My dad was our pastor. And so we just had conversations with people, but we didn't actually go through that. We didn't have a lot of family planning talks. I am not suggesting this is how you do it. I'm just saying we didn't have a ton of expectations, like realistic expectations. And so we hadn't talked it all out. So basically, in getting pregnant and being young and then having two babies, and they were 21 months apart, so pretty close. And then we were doing ministry. We were in student ministry at the time. So we had like, you know, 50 other kids. All of it became very heavy at a certain point. I remember feeling like we were doing ministry together. We were doing family together, but we were just going through these motions. And I loved him and he loved me and we would have fun together, but there was no room in the budget for date night. There was no room in the budget for a babysitter. Oh my goodness, that would have been a luxury. And so we had to carve out these moments, which ended up being after bedtime. It ended up going into the way we disciplined too, or the way we set expectations. Our girls were very young and they'd wake up like early. I remember Kennedy would come in and come to the side, to Kent's side of the bed, and just like hang over his face until he woke up. It scared him to death every time. And she'd say, "I want breakfast." And she would use TH, and it was my favorite thing, instead of an F there. And he would say, "You have to go back to your room until the sun comes up." And we've told parents that, and they're like, "You can do that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we did." I mean, we didn't know we weren't supposed to. So like our mornings, we would have a little bit more time there. I honestly believe it's just, if both of you want time together and you want to create the time, then you will, and you'll put it in moments wherever you get it. Our biggest family value, other than the Lord, is fun. And so we have always put fun first. It's always been something that's been important to us. Laugh together, play together. And I think when they were little, it obviously had to involve them more. So there were more outings, more trips, more playtime, but it's what worked for us in the moment. Then when they got older, I'll never forget when they started becoming independent. So Kent and I met, got engaged, and got married in less than a year. So I hadn't really dated my husband very much. And then the kids came. And so they became independent and we started being able to have like date night. And it was the coolest thing ever. And that has stuck around. Now, we have not had this thing on the calendar where it's like every Sunday night, every whatever. We're more spontaneous. But I think it all boils down to maybe once a week you ask each other and you just check in and say, hey, listen, did you get enough attention? Did you get enough attention? And being really, really honest to say, I needed more time with you this week. I felt like that week went by and I didn't get to hear from you and I forgot to tell you about important things. I think the verbal check-in is the most important part. And then after that comes date night or fun night or whatever. But anyone can make time for a verbal check-in. Mm-hmm. And that is just, you just got to be honest. And like, you just have to throw your pride away and say, I'm going to be real with you. Even if you didn't need me more this week, I needed more of you. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful thing to just all the way through. But those of you with little kids, date nights are coming and they are, it is the coolest thing when you don't have to pay for a babysitter.
Yeah. All those are really great tips. And I know so many moms are going to be blessed. And I do want to switch gears now into productivity before we combine them. Yeah. I love being productive. Let's say the word, Jess. And I remember one of your best tips was clearing everything off your desk, except the things that you use all the time. Mm-hmm. It was one of my things I just remember because I was like, what don't I need? What don't I use? Because I am also a creature of system. Like, give me a system where I can just basically walk up to my desk and I have everything there. Yes. Talk about productivity, if you want to talk about it, in just a sense of overall, how can we as women just be more productive with our time and our days so that we can get the things done that we've been called to do? Maybe like 2 to 3 things that you want to share.
So here's where I'll start. I think one thing I've learned in teaching productivity for, I don't know how many years I've been doing this now, is that I have slowly started to understand what we've done wrong in teaching productivity, because this is not a topic that is hard to find on the bookshelves or in articles or on blogs. This is everywhere. Everybody is teaching you the best ways to do things. And I love that. I think that's great. However, when I would go searching at the beginning of me trying to figure all of this out for resources that I loved, I would read it. I would get excited about it. I would buy all the things they told me to buy. I would set everything up the way they told me to set it up. And then 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, it wasn't working. And so it was wasted time, wasted energy, wasted money. And honestly, it was very discouraging because I just kept going, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get this? And then I started to realize there are different personality types. We are all created differently. We are unique. The Lord talks about this all through scripture. Everybody has different gift sets. We've got the eye, the hand, the foot, this is the body of Christ. It's beautiful and it's different. And yet we teach productivity in this same way, like this box, like everything goes in this box. And the cleaner your desk is, the better you are. The messier your desk is, the better you are. Like we have these lines of rules and we never take into consideration the personality of the person we're talking to. So once I started teaching productivity based on people's personality, I saw not only light bulb moments, but like women who were encouraged to keep trying, women who felt motivated by the way they are wired rather than discouraged by it, rather than defeated by it. And that was a beautiful thing. That was a beautiful thing to say, hey, you are a creative, free spirit and you can still be extremely productive. And at the end of the day, not feel scattered and like you missed out on something. And hey, you are all about logistics, analytics. You are an organized gal, but it doesn't mean that there can't be fun in your day. It doesn't mean that you can't also have a moment or a coffee with someone or whatever. And the personality part of who we are, if we don't take that into consideration when we create productivity in our schedule through the week, that's the reason we fail. That's the reason we struggle. So one of the tips, Jess, you just mentioned, I say oftentimes, I probably should be called a simplification coach more than a productivity coach, because I truly believe that simplifying is where it all starts. And simplification it doesn't matter your personality type, because simplification doesn't look the same to everyone. So simplifying our desks, getting rid of clutter, to me, some things are clutter that to my husband, who is a crazy creative, like, are not clutter, and it vice versa. So his desk will look messier than mine, but it is intentional and he is still productive and he's gotten rid of the clutter he needs to get rid of. So he's still clutter-free. We're both clutter-free. We're both simplified, but they look different because our brains are different. So I think when you can get this mountaintop view of your day, that is step one to creating a really good schedule. And I always start with what we call a skeleton schedule, where you carve out the hours of your day where things go. So the morning is me, like the early morning is me, then the late morning is work, and then lunch, and then the afternoon is work and maybe a different type of work, and then the evening is family. And it can be that simple, that you have these categories. So when you create your schedule, you're not stealing time from work to give to family, or stealing from family to give to work. You have this skeleton of things of where you can put things. So the mountaintop view that brings that is a beautiful thing. Again, considering your personality. So I have a very scheduled day on Mondays, but my week gets less scheduled as I go. By Thursday, I'm super bored. I need freedom. I need playtime. I need coffee. I want to dream. I want to cast vision. Those are the things I want to do. So overall, the mountaintop view, I'm a pretty routine person. The beginning of my week is scheduled. The end of my week is creative, visioneering. But when I look in the day-to-day, the end of my week, it looks messier, but it's not. It's intentional. I know that's what I need, and I know that's what matters. So look at your personality and determine what works best for you. Free spirits can be super scheduled people. It's totally okay. They just need a little less rigidness. They need what I call a rhythm, whereas our administrative style brains, you can be great with the schedule and you'll need it a little bit tighter. And you're what I call more of a routine person. Knowing that about yourself matters, and having a mountaintop look when you're creating a schedule is huge. So you need to do that like once a month. Go to the top of the mountain, look down on your schedule and see what you want your week to look like. What feels comfortable for you? What works for you? If you need a sweatpants day, that's probably a day you won't do a lot of meetings. You need to think that through. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I am all about challenging a narrative around here that we believe. And I can remember when I first started working from home, and I wasn't married at that time or anything. And I was living in my house, and I was waking up at like 5 or 6 a.m. because that's what productive people do. Right? You wake up super early. And I didn't have kids. I wasn't married. I'm single. And I'm waking up and I'm miserable. I hated it, but I forced myself to do it because everybody said, if you get up, you make your bed, then you'll be successful and all these things. And it was draining me. I hated it. I just wanted to go back to bed. I was falling asleep. I was miserable. And then I was like, no, I'm going to sleep. Like, I want to sleep in, you know, of course, it's right past like 7 for me, but we still don't have kids. And then I realized I hate having meetings on Monday. Granted, today's Monday we're recording, but that just happens. But I'm like, wow, I really hate Mondays where I feel rushed and super scheduled. Like, I need Mondays where they're just, I can be more like,
ease in.
Yeah. I need that because I'm a very like, tell me what to do, I'll do it, and give me my list and I'll get it done. But Mondays, don't tell me what I need to do. Like, that's what I feel like meetings are to me. It's like, I have to be somewhere. And so how about you give tips on, first of all, how about you address some lies about productivity? Because I think that's really important, because obviously we love addressing lies around here. And I kind of just shared one of mine. Mm-hmm. And you said that we kind of have this perspective talk to us. Mm-hmm. How can you help women kind of sift through some lies that they might not even realize that they're believing, because they keep seeing it over and over again that they think they have to do in order to be successful or considered to be productive? Did you like how I'm productive? Yeah, I would love for you to address some lies.
Okay. So the first one we kind of just talked about with the lie that the only productive people are those administrative, organized, perfectionist people. Big lie. Creatives can also be incredibly productive, and us telling that lie or allowing that narrative to live is what makes our creatives feel like they can never get it right. And so they end up giving up on dreams a lot faster than the administrative organized brain does. And that's sad. So I think we need to understand that productivity looks different to everyone. We have to see that. The other lie that drives me crazy, having margin is productive. So the lie that productive looks like busy work, go, 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 do, 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 that is a lie and it is not okay. And we need to fight against that. Margin is absolutely a productive thing to have in your life. I always tell women, I am so much more likely to see the Lord show up and to see doors open and to see opportunities put right in front of my face when I have put margin into my day. And I would love to be disciplined enough and open to the voice of the Holy Spirit enough that I hear it at all times. And that is a goal of mine for sure. But when I get deep into work and this is the next thing and this is the next thing and this is the next thing, it is much easier for me to miss out on his voice than it is when there are little pockets of margin throughout my day where I can stop and just ask and just listen. If you're a believer, people are the point. So how do you find time for people if you don't have any time for margin? How do you make people feel special if they're always thinking you're too busy for them? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you create margin and you create it just to have margin, just to be available, just to walk in a coffee shop and see if there's someone who needs a smile that day. If the barista just needs encouragement that day, like, as believers, we should absolutely be thinking through that. It is not to be lazy. It is to be well-intentioned. It is to be good stewards of our time. So I know we always talk about, instead of doing it all, do what matters. And I believe wholly that when we finally learn that and understand that as women, that we will end our days feeling so much more fulfilled and content because we did the right things, that it will change the next day and the next day and the next day. But the lie that keeps coming to us is that the doing it all, like that everything's important, that everything's important. So it's not so much that we don't believe, oh, we need to do it. We need to do what matters. It's the disconnect between what matters and thinking that everything matters. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to do major inventory. We have to ask the Lord to show us what actually matters. And I just taught a women's study last Saturday, and we just talked about our entire aim of life is just asking God, does this please you? Does this please you? Does this please you? Like, if you move throughout your day, just asking the Lord, is this going to please you? Is what's next going to please you? It takes the pressure off of do, 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 and be busy and productive and you're a machine and all of these things. So create margin, mm-hmm. Absolutely create margin and leave it. Don't fill it with other things because it will be easy, but create it.
It sounds like you're saying it doesn't matter how many things you get done. Is it the right things that got done?
Always.
Yeah.
Always. And the right things more than likely will have a lot to do with people. I think we've got to remember that at the end of the day, that's a very, it's a spiritual truth and a logical answer that at the end of the day, when we're trying to decide, did I do what matters is going to have a lot more to do with people than it does with task list. So you probably need to look at your days and just see, who am I reaching out to? Who am I serving? Who am I loving? Who am I pointing to Jesus? Because it's the point.
Yeah. How about we go ahead and combine them now for the moms that found themselves homeschooling this year or half homeschooling where, you know, because every school, every region and state is so different right now. How can you merge the two of parenting and productivity for a mom that's listening to encourage them if their kids are home or half home and they feel like their whole world has been turned upside down and their whole schedule has changed? Mm-hmm. What can you encourage their heart with today?
So first of all, I love you and I'm sorry. And I know it's hard. I know it's hard. But I would just tell you, in talking to so many women in this place right now, the first thing that we're having to really work on is coming to a place where we allow ourselves to grieve what was. We allow ourselves to grieve the traditional school year, the traditional activities, having 8 to 3 to yourself. And we grieve it, but then we get over it. Because a lot of us are still stuck there because so many people keep promising it's coming back and all of the things. And we don't know, honestly, we don't know what's happening. We don't know when everything will be back to normal, but we do know that God's got us and this was all in his plan. And there is nothing at all that is surprising to him right now. So these moments that he has created inside of your home, doing what you're doing, are intentional. And we need to see them as that. And we need to get over what was and move on. And it sounds harsh, but it's just the truth. Because until we do that, we can't wake up every morning and get excited about what's coming. We can't feel purposeful in the moment. We feel like we're just putting a Band-Aid on everything. And it's time to take the Band-Aid off. It's healed and just move forward. And so in your day-to-day time with your children, in your moment when they're at home, when they've never been at home before, productivity looks like whatever it needs to look like to make sure that Christ is the center of everything that goes down and that the bare minimum was accomplished before you fall asleep. I've told, I don't know how many women, I don't know that now is the right time for a lot of us to be overachievers. And I don't know whoever told us we had to be that. I think that this has really challenged our hustle mentality, mm-hmm. our side businesses that were never enough, our ideas and products and services that we just wanted to monetize so badly that now people need and we don't have the time to monetize so that we can still just put it in people's hands. We just have this opportunity now to look at life differently and to say, I want to do my due diligence and let the Lord supernaturally do everything above and beyond that. I don't have to do that. And I never did, but right now, more than ever, that pressure needs to come off of our shoulders to do it all, to do it perfectly, to go above and beyond, to create all the time. Right now, it is about the moments inside of your home. It's about the moments with your family. It's about pointing your children to Jesus. And it's about getting through to an extent, like just doing it, just moving past today and moving in tomorrow. And if the only thing that happened was that you grew closer to the Lord, then congratulations, sister, like you killed it. Amazing, wonderful, amen, keep on going. And so I truly believe we have to lower the bar that we put up, like the Lord's expectations for our lives. That's it. That's all we need to be looking at right now. And he is very clear in scripture of what that is. Love me and love others and go and make disciples. So if you do that, you won the day. You won the day.
Well, I guess I should say like mic drop there or something. Because it's so true. I mean, again, I think it goes back to the narrative. You know, we saw the meme going around kind of, I would say, middle of COVID, where it was like, if you don't produce something during this time of COVID, it wasn't time that was your issue. It was whatever, something else, you know, like we just saw all these memes going around. And with work and finances, it's easy for us to go, okay, now is when I need to hustle. Now is when I need to do all the things. Mm-hmm. And then you're forcing yourself and, you know, all of that. And those are just really good points. Summer, I know we've went a little bit longer today than most episodes, but it was so good. And I love, again, the productivity and the parenting, because I obviously am not a mom, but I get to speak into all kinds of other people and women.
Yes.
What do you want to leave with women just in general to remind them of what truth?
I would just tell you, aim for Jesus. It cannot be on us to hit the bullseye every single time. And we don't have to worry about that. Just aim at Jesus, and he takes care of all of those details. And in order to aim, your eyes have to be there on him the entire time. You can't aim for something you're not looking at. So that to me has just been my daily go-to. The trajectory, it matters. Aiming matters. He'll take care of the bullseye.
Where do you want us to find you and come hang out with you?
Oh, you've got to come hang out with me at She Works His Way. That is where you'll see Jess very often. She is one of our incredible writers, and I'm so grateful for you, Jess, and the way you pour into that ministry. But She Works His Way is a ministry for working women who love Jesus, and we train and encourage you and support you, and we take community seriously. So we actually have community there. We are virtual. I wish we weren't. I wish we were all at coffee every Monday together, but we are virtual. So you need to find us on Instagram at She Works His Way. And then I am on Instagram, and I'm terrible at social media, but I will try to do better. But at Summer Phoebus, if you guys want to hang out there, my DMs are always open. I actually do love talking to everyone there. So
yeah, I'll make sure I have all the show notes below for that, or the links for the, you know, to find you. So thank you. Thank you, Summer, for your wisdom and just how well you love people. I know, because I see it firsthand. And every time I see you at Narrow every year, you guys have to come to Narrow. She Works His Way Narrow. I always just want to hug you, and because you guys are just amazing. So thank you again. And this was just so fun.
Love you, Jess.
P.S. One more thing. If you've ever felt like you weren't good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, thin enough, strong enough, worthy enough, or doing enough, then my best-selling book, Know Your Worth, is for you. If you knew what you were worth, would you settle for anything less? It's not uncommon to feel inadequate, whether it's issues surrounding your career, your body, relationships, or your finances. You will discover gems to apply in your own life as I take you through my own journey of how I was able to overcome the unthinkable by realizing my worth wasn't tied in the things or people, but to God. In this book, I really walk you through the how-to of stop settling for relationships that do nothing but cause you pain. Find the tools you need to be successful in life. Realize you are beautiful just the way you are. Refuse to settle for anything less than what's God's best for your life. And recognize that no matter what your past looks like, it doesn't have to be your future.